You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Thank you for listening to the show and telling your friends and stealing their phones and subscribing and all that jazz. We thank you. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
It's been helping so much.
Do not say I want to quit.
You don't want to quit.
I don't want to quit.
You don't want to quit, but you just might have to.
No. I don't want to quit. I want to keep the show going. It's doing well. We just need more listeners. So I'm asking my listeners to get their friends to listen and subscribe and write reviews. And that will help and keep it free, right?
Yes. Otherwise, people are going to start having to pay like $10 a month to listen to this.
That's not true.
I mean,
is that
for
possible?
You to keep this nice house.
You think it's nice? It doesn't have a pool or anything. I'm not like a
I mean, we
know,
could
I'm
start.
Not a, I'm not an A-lister.
We could start a GoFundMe for just your mortgage.
Dax has a big pool, doesn't he?
He's got a pool.
Hey, we got a great podcast today. Who is it, Rob?
It's Matthew Lewis.
Matthew Lewis, Neville Longbottom from the Harry Potter movies. He's done a lot of stage work, done a lot of TV. He lives out in L.A. We've got a great story. We met at a convention. I flew into London. He picked my brother and I up, drove us to Leeds. On the way, we stopped at the old Harry Potter Lodge or whatever the hell they call it.
Hogwarts?
Where the real place where they shot it, the studios at the time. And I got to meet all the owls and see all the sets before the
You got to meet owls?
Meet owls.
You got to meet some owls?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. All the original owls. It was dope.
Were they nice?
They were really nice.
Big ego or?
No, but he's a super guy. He loves rugby. He loves the Arctic Monkeys. We were driving up there.
He's pretty good at softball.
Oh, yeah. He played softball with us. Him and his wife came. And he was just at the Super Bowl party that I had. He wants to have a poker night. He's a gambler. He wants to come over to my house and play poker and take my money. So Matthew Lewis, he's fantastic. You're going to love this interview. I did. I love this. I think he's a genuine dude. And I was saying he likes the Arctic Monkeys. But when I asked him in the car, I go, what do you listen to? He goes, Arctic Monkeys. His accent's so thick. I'm like, what? Arctic Monkeys.
Sure, you would appreciate this impersonation.
Yeah, he would. I fuck with him all the time. Let's get inside Matthew Lewis.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I know I always say it's awesome to have certain guests on, but I'd say we have a little bit of a history.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, it's a good history. A lot of big gaps.
It's longer than I thought it was. I had to sit down and piece it together. Like when we were chatting together in Australia, three years ago.
Yeah.
We were in Australia.
At a convention, a signing.
Yeah. But then our relationship goes way back.
It goes way back.
Way back.
We can get into that. Matthew David Lewis.
David Lewis,
thank you for allowing me to be inside of you
today. Oh, my pleasure.
Yes, this
pleasure
is a real
is
treat.
All mine.
So we met, like you said, we met at Dragon Con.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In Atlanta.
Yep.
And you were with your brother,
yep.
Anthony.
Correct.
Are you closer with Anthony than Chris?
Probably, but only because we lived together in Leeds for a bit, where we're from, and then we lived together in London for a couple of years, and obviously sharing the same profession, because he's an actor as well, that kind of, I guess, brought us closer. But as a family, like, we're all pretty tight, we're all pretty close.
So take me back to, like, growing up. You weren't born in Leeds, you were born in
Leeds.
Yeah. You were.
Yeah.
Did you move, or was that it?
I was born in the house that my parents are still in. I mean, not literally in the house, in the hospital, but then I was, you know.
What do you mean they're in the hospital?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in a hospital.
Oh, you were born
I wasn't
in
born
hospital.
Literally in
I
the house.
It. It was
yeah,
a joke.
Like
yeah,
Victorian.
Right.
Way of giving birth at home. But you know, that is the house I always lived in. And my parents are still there. And I didn't move away until I was like 25. I think
you lived at home to 25.
I moved out of my parents' house when I was 18,
right,
into my own place, but in the same town, in a little town called Horsforth in Leeds.
I've been there.
Yeah, you've been, right?
You
yeah,
picked
yeah.
me up at the airport one time with my brother Eric, and
yep.
we drove to Leeds.
Yeah, we went. Did we go to the studio? Did we go to Leeds in the studio first? Or yeah,
I
we
think we
done.
Stopped by the studio first.
Yeah, and then we drove up to Leeds. And we went on a night
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and where was the studio? The Harry Potter studio.
That's in a glamorous little place called Watford.
Watford, that's right.
Watford, just north of London. Yeah, Leeds in Studios.
I mean, it's exactly what you think. Like it would be. I mean, it's so. It's beautiful, right? There's just a bunch of sets, yeah, right? Some buildings and the owls, I remember, and there was a little village, like, right? What was there?
It's completely different now because Warner Brothers bought it as soon as we finished. Now it's a nice studio. Now it's like top of the range. Everything's brand new. There's like everything you're in there. Yeah, that's old. Put a new one in. Everything's brand new.
So it wasn't nice.
No, I mean, it was.
You were looking at me like,
for
what?
You,
nice.
Fuck. People coming to visit probably think it was great. Like, oh, you've got all the Privet Drive and you've got all these great sets and stuff. But the actual place had been there. I mean, it was an airfield in the Second World War.
Right.
And they still had like holes in the ceiling from tracer rounds from the German planes going over and shooting the hell out of it. So it was like, it's still in the same sort of decrepit state that it was for 60-70 years, but then now they've done it up. It's beautiful now.
Right. Yeah.
As soon as we leave.
I remember there was the owls.
Yeah.
Right. Wasn't there a bunch of owls or the famous owls, right?
Yeah, because they had like animal department, which I think you went into, right?
Yeah. I got the whole thing.
Yeah, so they had everything
in
there. Loads of owls and foxes and cats and animals.
How often did people ask you to go into that fucking thing? Take me to what is it again? Watford.
Watford. I get asked quite a bit. I mean, it's now owned by like some third party company. I don't even know if it's still like the studio is owned by Warner Bros. But then there's like the studio tour, which is like next door,
right,
where you can go and see the sets and see what they're like and all that kind of stuff. I've been a couple of times, but never. I've always been like going there for like an opening or something like that. I've never gone just out of interest.
Really?
Yeah.
How many times do people go, hey, come on, Matt, can we go to this?
Yeah, a few times. You want to come around there?
What were we, like the 50th tour you'd given?
Oh, my God, like when it was actually working.
Yeah.
Well,
you're just so over it.
Bunch of people around
there.
These
assholes want to see this again.
That's why I palmed you off. I got Jody. Do you remember Jody? I was like, you take him around.
Oh, yeah, what'd you do while we were gone?
Show him around. I'm not doing all this again. I work here for crying out loud. I don't want to look around this.
Yeah. By the way, the way you speak, there's a lot of differences. Like in the United States, you have the Southern draw.
Yeah.
You know, if you're from Louisiana, if you're from New York, it's kind of the same thing in England, right? Wherever you're from is just a different way you speak.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a Yorkshire accent, Leeds, up in the north. A lot of Americans think I'm Scottish or Irish. I get that a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, what's other towns or city's perception of Leeds? Is it a popular city? Do people like to go to Leeds? Is there a big rivalry? Do people, you know? So
Leeds and Manchester are a big rivalry. Leeds is sort of like the capital of Yorkshire, and Manchester is sort of the capital of Lancashire. War of the Roses, Yorkshire, Lancashire. So Leeds, Manchester, naturally.
A lot of fights.
Historically, in the football, there would have been Leeds United and Manchester United hated each other.
And you're a big rugby fan.
I'm a rugby league fan. Yeah, Leeds Rhinos.
How passionate on a scale from 1 to 10 are you about Leeds rugby?
Leeds Rhinos, very, very passionate. I mean, I know I've been fortunate enough over the years to get to meet everyone there, from the top down, the CEO, the president, the coach.
You know the players pretty well.
All the players, yeah.
You're good friends with the players.
Yeah.
You hang out with them.
Yeah.
Are they big drinkers?
Not so much during the season, because they're consummate professionals, and you can't win 8 grand finals by drinking all the time.
Really?
But when it's end of the season, we have a thing called Mad Monday, where it's the first Monday after the season finishes for you, and everyone just goes out, and it's kind of what happens on Mad Monday stays on Mad Monday kind of affair. I actually, one time, I was doing a play in the West End in London, and against all the odds, they won the grand final. This was in 2012, I think. They won the grand final, and I watched it on a Saturday night.
That's the big thing?
Yeah, that's
grand
the big one.
Final.
That's like the Super Bowl of rugby league. That's it. The big one. And I watched it after my play, and I had a day off on the Sunday. I was supposed to be back in on Monday. And so I went up to Leeds, and I wasn't able to get involved on the Mad Monday because I was working that night, but I went out on the Sunday with them. We did a whole day session Sunday, and I had to get the train afterwards, still drunk, back down to London to do the play the next day.
Wait, it was
the most awful play I've ever
done.
Were
you terrible?
I was awful.
Did you remember your lines?
My lines were fine, but I couldn't really speak. I tried to get so much medication into my throat because my throat was gone completely.
From screaming and
from
yelling.
Shouting and drinking and staying. Yeah, all that. I couldn't speak. I think it was probably the people who came to see that show, they should have got their money back for that. In fact, we should have paid them on top of them getting their money
back.
Did
you ever search for reviews for that night?
No way, man. No.
Because it'd be like, Matthew Lewis looks like he was at some championship.
Oh, my God. It would have been so bad. I mean, and it's one of the few things. I mean, I like to think that I'm pretty professional with work. But I tell you, that is, yeah, rugby is just one thing that just gets me to go a bit crazy. But you have that.
What do you mean? What?
You have that, like, with the hockey, ice hockey.
When the Giants won, when the Mets were playing the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And whoever won Game 7 would go to the World Series. And it was on the set of Smallville. And I remember the director's like, all right, we got a roll here. I go, we're not fucking doing a thing. You guys got to give me a minute. It's bases loaded. Beltron's up. It base hit knocks in two and we're going to the World Series. You just got to bear with me. And the whole crew is watching and they're rooting for me. And they're just all sitting there and they were playing it's like 10:30 or nah, I don't know whatever in Vancouver. And I just remember, and here's the pitch on the way to Beltron. And it's a call third strike. The game's over. And I was crushed. And they go, and the director goes, all right, Rosenbaum, let's fucking do it.
Oh my God.
And they shut the radio off and they go, we're rolling. Action. And I just was, that was probably the worst take of my
life.
Man. It just was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
we're going to do that again and we're never going to let you listen to sports again.
Oh man. I mean, Leeds tend to win. I'm like not trying to rub that in there, but it's what it does make a difference when they, I mean, being heartbroken is in a different, whole different.
So how many times have they won?
They started having grand finals in like 1996, I think it was, and we've won it 8 times since then.
If you lose, who cares?
We've got plenty of championships behind us. I actually did 2015. I got a lot of people. I kind of did a lot of phone calls to some people I was working with at the time and some old friends and stuff, and got some good luck messages for the guys. I got one from Dan Radcliffe, which is pretty cool. He basically gets on there and he just says, I don't know much. We're playing a team called Wigan Warriors in the final. And he said, I don't know much about rugby league, but I know Matt's a big fan. So I want to say good luck to you all and fuck Wigan. And I tell you,
did he hear it?
I spoke to so many of the boys and they said that was the whole time they were playing that game. They were thinking of Dan Radcliffe just going, fuck Wigan. And it got him through.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, are you guys good friends, you and Daniel Radcliffe, still?
Well, it's difficult because everyone's sort of all over the place doing different stuff. But yeah, we're still friends, yeah. If we're in the same place, we'll definitely try and catch up.
An occasional email. Hey, how you doing? Checking
in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what about Emma?
Yeah, still see Emma.
Now, I remember something. I don't know if you're going to recall, and maybe you'll just choose not to remember. something about, like, you were youthful.
Yeah.
You were young. You were the young Neville. You know, and I don't know, you guys were friends. It was a cute little thing, right?
Right.
You hung out.
Yeah.
That was it. Did you?
Oh, I see. All right.
You see where this is going.
All right. No, nothing. It's just weird. You asked that. Someone asked this in a interview. I did a bunch of interviews for a TV show in the UK. And they asked that exact same question. Yeah.
Because, you know, you were a cute guy. She's a beautiful young lady. How old are you at this point? You're young. I'm not talking about...
Yeah, we were kids.
Was it ever like that little heart crush, that little, oh my gosh, she's cute. I want to kiss her.
When I was younger,
playground.
Yeah. When I was young.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, when you were young.
You did.
Yeah.
Did she know you had a crush?
Yeah.
She did?
Well, no, she didn't at the time. She did. We did, I think she found out years later.
And she said, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
We could have been so
mates. She said, you should have said. But I didn't, because I was a loser.
Aren't we all?
Aren't we all?
I mean, I've never lost that loser aspect.
No, man. I'm such a geek. I'm kind of like, the only thing you do is you don't mature. You don't get any less of a geek. You just deal with it. You sort of start to go, you know what? I don't care anymore. I'm thrilled that I like Star Trek and all that kind of stuff. Right. You just, instead of getting rid of it, you just embrace it, I think, as you get older.
You know, do you really feel like that? Do you really feel like you don't give a shit?
No, I don't.
You really don't?
No.
I mean, you consider yourself your child actor. You were a child actor.
Yeah.
Right? You started young. How old were you?
5 when I first started.
5 years old.
Yeah.
And you had this confidence, right? You loved it. You were just fearless. I think children are more fearless at that age.
Yeah, I probably was fearless. I became much more self-aware around kind of 10, 11. I don't know why. I don't know if I just... When I was like 5, 6, when I was acting, it was like second nature. I didn't care. I had no inhibitions.
Didn't care what people thought.
Not at all. I was getting there. As soon as you get to a certain age, I don't know where, like puberty or whatever, I just became very self-aware and became very introvert and very shy and
hard on yourself.
Yeah.
And nervous.
Yeah, very much so.
And do you think you're like that now at all?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I think a lot of it's been shed at the wayside a little bit. You know, I've been able to cast a lot of it off. But still, I think a lot of actors, most actors have still got a certain degree of criticism that they can't seem to shake at all.
Yeah, I think that's hard because I'm talking about like cognitive behavioral therapy,
okay.
Which talks about like, you know, if you're ever like if you're constantly bombarded like with these internal negative thoughts, yeah. You know, and you're like, why do I think negative? Why do I think about positive things all the time? Why when I wake up, the first thing is like, what if this? What about this? What about? I'm like, I want to change that shit. I don't like that.
Yeah.
And I think it's bullshit. And you see these quotes all the time online, and they're like, you know, like I can't quote them. I can't quote these quotes, but they're more or less saying, you know, why do you let fear get in your way?
Yeah.
Why do you? I'm like, I don't. It just does.
Exactly.
What do you want from me?
It was as simple as that. We'd all be doing it, right?
Rob, yeah. Do you get nervous? Do you freak out?
I don't act, so no.
You do get nervous and weird. I see when your face blushes when I talk to you sometimes.
No, I get caught off guard.
You never get like, what makes you nervous, Rob?
I mean, I don't like public speaking and things like that, so I don't do that.
Yeah.
What if you have to? What if someone goes, tomorrow you're going to be standing up at the State of the Union?
That would make me very nervous.
What about, you said you got a kid?
Yep, got a little one-year-old.
Okay, and when they said, hey, you're going to have a kid, what did you make of that? Oh, did you think
we were? I mean, we were planning it. So.
You were planning,
yeah. What,
right? I mean, it caught us off guard. It happened.
It's not planning.
No.
Getting caught off guard.
It's the opposite.
You know,
we were.
You know, when someone throws a ball at you, I guess you're kind of not planning for it to hit you in the face.
I can explain. We were trying.
Briefly.
It happened very fast. I was expecting it to take a year, and it took.
You're
like
very fertile.
2 months. Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
Right.
So you were ready for it. So you did. I mean, was there at any point like you were coming home from the hospital and you're like, shit, like I've got to do this now. It's not just an idea. That is actually a human child in the back seat.
A little bit. I was more.
I love how Matthew is taking this interview over. Now more with Matthew Lewis. I like that though. I like this though.
I just want to hear someone else that's terrified about their daily life.
Well, I think everybody. I think the reason I asked him is I think because everybody is.
Yeah.
And I've learned that through talking to my guests who were some very famous guests on. So they still get nervous. Some people will say, no, I don't give a shit. You know, there's those rare exceptions, and I think they're liars.
Yeah.
I think we all care how people respond to us, people's perception. But I think the ultimate goal is to just be confident in yourself and love yourself, and the rest will come.
I think one of the things that I've sort of started to think about a lot in recent years, you know, everyone sort of says, at what age do you get to where suddenly you go, I get it now. I know how this all works. You know, I look at my parents and I go, they've got their shit together. My dad knows how to do all this stuff. Whenever.
What does he do? What does dad do?
Well, he's retired now. He was a systems engineer. Basically, in the 70s, he was working for this company and someone said, hey, we got this thing called a computer. Does anyone want to learn how to use that? And he was like, yeah, go on, I'll do it. And next thing you know, he's heading up the whole thing. And I just think like whenever I have a question about anything, whether it's finances or, you know, should I buy this house? I'm not sure. Is it going to be good? He just knows everything. He knows exactly what to say, what to do. I think, at what age am I going to get to that point?
I'll never get there.
But then I realize he's full of shit as well. He doesn't know.
You really think he's full of shit?
Everyone's just trying to figure out what the hell they're doing in this world.
Everybody has so much advice.
Like
everybody has so much advice. Even I had advice. My late friend Carrie Fisher always had the best advice. God rest her soul. But I'll tell you what, she never took that advice.
Right.
So she would listen to her fucking therapists. And then she'd tell me about what I need to do. And it made so much sense. And I go, why aren't you doing
right.
that? And I do the same thing. I get this advice, and I wouldn't say advice, but people, you know, I talk to my therapist or whatever, and he'll say something. I go, that makes perfect sense. And I wish there was just a button you could press,
do it.
Understand, yeah. and then that problem is solved. But it's not.
We're all stuck on this rock and flying through space of billions of light years, and we're just, none of us know what the hell we're doing. Anyone who says they know what they're doing, they're lying through their teeth, man. No one knows what we're doing here. We just got to try and make the best of it, and be good to each other while
we're
there.
You hear that, Rob? You fucking hear that?
Yeah, I'm lying through my teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one knows what they're doing.
So your mom, what was she doing while you guys were growing up?
My mom, well...
She just a stay-at-home mom?
No, she was. She used to work for the council, the local council, as a youth worker. She used to look after... she ran like a youth center where all these kids can come up and, you know, from all kinds of different social backgrounds.
She'd throw you and Anthony in there after a couple of years?
Yeah, was she... Well, you know, she was working, so we'd have to go to work with her and we'd have to go and sit in the youth club and do all that kind of... It was fun, though. I mean, they had like... It was there... to entertain kids on a night. So there was a disco, there was...
Were they troubled kids?
Some of them were, some of them weren't. It was from, where, you know, wherever, all across the spectrum. And, you know, people still come up to my mum now in Horsforth, you know, in the town. They say, you know, Linda, you really, when I was a kid, I'm not sure how far I was going to go. But, you know, with your guidance and stuff, then, you know, I got off that track. I got on a different one. And she sees that a lot. So, and unfortunately, she had to give that job up so she can look after this guy on Harry Potter. So, you know... Kudos to her for giving up a job that she loved to come and look after me.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you're pretty grounded. You know, we've hung out and we keep in touch. And when I met you, and I actually met your folks,
yeah,
I think, in Leeds.
Yeah.
I went to that house that they've
correct
lived in and
still
so on.
There.
And I sensed that, you know, you had a good upbringing. And you're a guy who likes to throw a few back. You know, you like to have a little fun. You had a little edge. So it's you think of your dad and the engineering and your mom and social work and all these things. Uh-huh. And what was it about acting? I mean, did she get, how do you get into that?
Right.
That
well, age? I mean, nothing to do with me actually at all. It was my brother Anthony. So so he's just a complete performer when he was a kid, and he was doing it all at school. And I think the head teacher had kind of had enough of him, and had said to my parents, "Look, this guy wants to perform. He can be a handful when he's not performing, so, you know, you should probably take him somewhere and
let the energy out."
Yeah, exactly. And my parents were like, "That whole world's nothing that we understand, or it's crazy. It's a phase. He'll grow out of it." And he didn't. And the head teacher eventually got him in the school again and said, "Look, if you don't take him somewhere, I will, because he's got something." And so eventually they said, fine, we'll take him somewhere. And he started working, and from the age of 8, I think, he started working.
And he was getting TV shows and things,
right? Doing TV stuff and like leading TV stuff, like kids TV. And I was 2 years old. My mom was looking after him, so I had to go along because I was only 2, and I just grew up on it. And so, I mean, I copied both my brothers on everything. I mean, like, if you look at my musical tastes are very much Anthony's. My TV and film tastes are very much Christopher's and that kind of thing. And so I copied him with the acting thing, and I wanted to do it. And I think at that age, I assumed that's what people did.
So you owe everything to Anthony.
Yeah, great deal. I mean, like, I started at 5 because I copied him, and I went with the same agency, and they gave me an audition as a tester, and I ended up getting it. And so,
a tester? What the hell's a tester?
They were basically like, "Look, you're a bit too young to join our agency, but we'll send you off for an audition to see how you cope, and we'll get some feedback." It's
just one audition.
Yeah, you ain't going to get it. We're just going to send you to see what feedback you get.
Yeah.
And see if we'll let you in. I ended up getting it, they let me in after that. Yeah, my first.
What was it?
It was a film called Some Kind of Life with Jane Horrocks and Ray Stevenson. It was kind of heavy. It was about Jane Horrocks played my mum, and Ray Stevenson, my father, and he had a motorcycle accident and left him brain damaged. And so he kind of reverted to a mental age of about a 5-year-old. And it was how the mother coped with having him as a 5-year-old and an actual 5-year-old in me.
That's how Rob copes with me. So, so it was the same relationship, pretty much.
It was a biopic on YouTube.
Yeah, seriously.
So I did that at 5, and then just the work kept coming in after that. So, yeah, I guess I...
And you just fell in love with it. You loved it. It was fun being on set.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like your dad, because I always felt like this, I felt like I was a disappointment.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know what, I felt like you felt like, oh, he's going to be more like his mother and kind of all over the place, and she wants to be an actress and all this stuff, and here my dad is working, you know, 9 to 6 every day, never missing a job, and all this shit. And, you know, I think I was like, were you kind of disappointed? So I asked you, you know, your dad, he's an engineer, your mom, and now you're both actors. Did you ever feel like they were like, oh, come on?
No, never.
Total support.
I mean, yeah, 110%. They've always been behind us doing whatever we want to do. I think the only point that my parents will be disappointed is my dad always thinks I should be winning Oscars. I should be winning BAFTAs. My
dad's that supportive.
Yeah, he's like,
he believes in you.
He's constantly just like, why? I mean, I watched this thing you did. And you need to be doing bigger roles than that. Why are you only doing that supporting role? I'm like, I don't know, Dad. I wish I was doing, because one, it's not good enough. You should be speaking to your agent to get better stuff. I was like, well, I'll do that. I mean, if it's coming from you, I shall get on the phone right away. And I'm
doesn't sure. that give a? I think that people don't realize it gives a child an amazing amount of confidence and just joy.
It's amazing
when when their family supports them, when they really love what they do and they believe in them.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad, I think, my dad hated his job. Actually, in truth. He did it.
Maybe he wants to be an actor. Maybe you can help him now. Maybe bring him out to California and we'll set him on some audition. Maybe he'll get his first one.
Oh, man. My dad hates all that kind of stuff. TV, cameras.
Doesn't like it. Has he ever been interviewed like, how do you feel about your son becoming famous?
He'd run a mile. I don't think he wouldn't fancy that at all.
He'd be like, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly that.
Please kindly fuck off, Linda.
Out of my face.
Fuck off.
Yeah, exactly that. He's much more comfortable, in the terraces with a pint watching the rugby, away from all that kind of thing. But he hated his job, and he did that job for 40-odd years, and I think when a big company came in and they bought him out, they made redundancies and he took early retirement. Not a single guy up from head office or wherever came down to say thanks for 40-odd years.
Are
or
you appreciate- kidding
not
me?
A single guy.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I not only believe it because you told me, but that's the truth. But,
yeah,
I get that because I think that's the major problem with most jobs. I don't care what you're doing. It's just the lack of appreciation or the feeling of appreciation. Like, I think people, if they went to their 9-to-5s or if they're actors or whatever they're doing, if their bosses every once in a while would sort of just say, hey, I really just want to tell you I appreciate what you're doing. I think you're really great at what you're doing. And I just it doesn't have to be all the time, but I think it's healthy for the environment, for the work environment, and it helps. I just think it's a good thing to
do. Because you're sitting there and it's monotonous and you're thinking, what the hell is this all for? This rat race of just getting up in the morning just to
– why?
What are we doing this for? So if there's some kind of appreciation, some kind of acceptance, you are valued. You're an important cog in this machine. We couldn't do it without you. Just something.
Yeah. Rob, I really appreciate you. You're doing a fantastic job on the podcast. I think there's a lot of knobs here on this control panel that I couldn't possibly figure out. So that makes you smarter than me when it comes to knob turning. And I just want to say thanks for all your input and make sure all the microphones work, please.
You're welcome. Thanks for making him appreciate me.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad.
There you go. Thank you, Matthew.
No, I was glad to facilitate that.
All right.
Should we hug now?
Should we? Well, I don't know. I'm holding a mic here in my hand. Inside of You is brought to you by Factor. I love Factor meals, Ryan. Do you know this?
Yes.
Why do you know this?
Because I've seen them in your fridge and you've offered me some.
And you've had them.
And I've had them.
And you love them.
I do.
Because I asked you every time.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I spent an enormous amount of money using delivery services for food or going grocery shopping and never eating the food that I buy or too many leftovers. And it's just, I waste so much money. And, Factor Meals has really changed my life in a lot of ways because they have so many different meals, like 35 different meals, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And it takes just 2 minutes. So it doesn't matter how busy you are. It's 2 minutes to cook this stuff. You always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And that's what Factor does. I just can't get over all the things they have, like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon, their breakfast items, everything, dessert. It's perfect for my lifestyle. And I think it's perfect for a lot of lifestyles. Yeah, you can crush your wellness goals this May with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients that you can trust.
Keep kitchen time to a minimum. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes. No shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up.
Enjoy effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced.
Warm, sunnier days are calling, Michael.
Well, yes, they are. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. It's pretty incredible. Head to factormeals.com/inside50 and use code INSIDE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code INSIDE50 at factormeals.com/inside50
to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Factor Meals. Inside of You is brought to you by Neurohacker, Qualia Synalytic. I just sent some of this to my mother, and she's starting to notice the differences in herself. And because I noticed my mother was always had brain fog and she couldn't think clearly. And I was like, well, this stuff works for me. And what's great is they weren't even a sponsor when I started using this. Have you heard of Synalytics yet? Well, listen, it's a class of ingredients discovered less than 10 years ago, and they're being called one of the biggest discoveries of our time for helping to promote healthy aging and helping to enhance your physical prime. Your life goals and your career and beyond require productivity. But let's be honest, the aging process is not our friend when it comes to endless energy and productivity. That's why I use Qualia Senolytic.
As we age, everyone accumulates senescent cells in their body.
Senescent cells may cause symptoms of aging, such as aches and discomfort, slow workout recoveries, hello, sluggish mental and physical energy, hello, associated with that middle age feeling, hello.
Also known as zombie cells, they are old and worn out and not serving a useful function for our health anymore, but they could be taking up space and nutrients from our healthy cells.
Much like pruning the yellowing and dead leaves off a plant, Qualia Synalytic helps remove those worn out senescent cells to allow for the rest of them to thrive in the body. And you just take it 2 days a month. That's it.
The formula is non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, and the ingredients are meant to complement one another, factoring in the combined effect of all ingredients together.
And they must believe in their product because they have a 100-day money-back guarantee. It's pretty amazing. I felt higher energies. I feel more focused, younger. I have to say, because a lot of these things make me feel younger. I feel more productivity happening in my life, a little more enthusiastic. Help resist aging at the cellular level. Try Qualia Synalytic. Go to neurohacker.com/inside for up to $100 off and use code INSIDE at checkout for an additional 15% off. That's neurohacker.com/inside for an extra 15% off your purchase. Thanks to Neurohacker for sponsoring today's episode. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. The products and statements are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
How often do you talk about this stuff with your buddies?
No, frequently.
Never.
No, frequently.
Do you think any of your close friends even know some of this stuff?
No, not really. Maybe my buddy Nick, who you know as well.
He stayed here.
Yeah, we both stayed here.
He stayed in my top bunk.
We did, man.
Well, no, it wasn't. Yeah, it was a separate room, two guys. I didn't want to be with you guys. You guys were farting all night, I'm sure.
I'm sure. It was a heavy night, that.
That was a fun night.
That was good.
That was back in the day when I used to go to clubs.
I used to have a little too much fun that night, I think.
I think you, did you?
Yeah,
I remember you being a little tipsy.
Honestly,
tipsy
I don't topsy. Remember, but Nick likes to hammer me about that night.
Nick, didn't he sleep in the crawl space or something up in the top bunk? There's like that.
Holy man.
Oh my God. Nick, you guys were a lot of fun.
He gives me some stick about that
I
night.
I think that's what I liked about you guys when I met you and your brother, Anthony. There was just two dudes who just wanted to hang out. There wasn't any pretension. There wasn't any, and I feel like that's sort of like I'm sure there's a lot of pretension in England, but in Leeds, maybe not. Maybe people are just a little more down to earth in Leeds.
Well, I think like I look at my dad and I look at like the everything he gave for an entire career for ultimately, you know, obviously it helped to made sure that we had a great environment to grow up in, but ultimately to not, you know, I think he hated it and he wished he did something else. And I look back and I go, how lucky I am to be doing what I'm doing. Just enjoy the ride, you know?
Enjoy the ride, brother.
So that's what I'm trying to do. I don't really... Listen, this whole business as well, you know, no matter how long you're in it, I don't know how much you can ever really feel comfortable in it or know exactly what's going on or the ins and outs. I don't think you ever stay at the top and you feel comfortable at the top. You're always treading water or whatever. So just enjoy the ride.
Do you enjoy it always? Do you honestly love being on sets? Do you love... Yeah, answer that. I mean, I'd like to know. I mean, do you really, is this something that you honestly, looking me in the eye, just to can say without the bullshit, without the, oh, I love it. I have some friends, my friend Dax, I talked about it before ad nauseum. He's always like, I just love to act. I love to be on set. I love it. And I go, I don't always love being on set.
Yeah.
I don't always love the job I'm doing. That's why I'm in a position, I'm lucky, but hopefully, well, maybe not. Maybe I'll never get hired for anything. I look at jobs like if I get, how much fun am I going to have on that?
Yeah.
Am I going to have a lot of fun, or is it going to challenge me? Is it a good environment? Is it going to get me to the next level? Is it, there's a lot of things, but ultimately you want to have fun.
I think that we, you know, you and I are in a kind of a privileged position. Exactly. You know, we've been able to work. We've been able to, you know, we're not wondering where the next food's coming from.
Yes, because I would do any fucking thing before I had any fame at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not that famous. You're much more famous than I am.
I don't think so.
I think so. But I'm just saying, I don't know. For me, I feel like I know what it was like, because I was, you know, I struggled for a little while. But it's so humbling to know how, I mean, this is the hardest business ever.
Yeah.
And we are privileged. But go ahead.
Sometimes you'll get this script will come in. You'll go, oh, God, that would be amazing. What an effort it would be. You know, I have to really get my head into that. And that would really beat the shit out of me for 6 months. Really. Do I want to get beat the shit out for 6 months?
That's the call. Did you hear that, Rob? He's saying that, oh my God, this would be great for me, and this would be really good for my career, but it could be really hard. And there comes a time in a man's life when you hit 45, or how old are you?
I'm only 28. I've got no excuse.
Fuck you.
I got no excuse.
You're both, but you know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, what's it worth? Yeah. I don't want to lose years of my life doing this project if it's gonna kill me, unless I really am conditioned for it. Mentally and physically.
But then, I mean, hey, if you read the script and you go, this is a story that I want to tell. I love this.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit how hard this is going to be. I want to, you know, say you read a book and it was your favorite book growing up, and someone goes, hey, we're going to make it into a film and you're going to be the lead in it. And you're like, that book was mental. How is anyone going to do that? But fuck, I want to be the one to do it. You know, sometimes you'll get that, but.
Yeah, you're right. My friend Al, who created Smallville, we go out have our lunches, and he goes, Michael, he gave me a script, and he says, we wrote this with you as a lead. Have a look. And I had lunch with him again about 2 weeks later. And I said, this is incredible. Al, you guys really wrote a tremendous script. The characters are just, they're fleshed out. They're just, they pop. This is going to be a huge hit. I have no doubt. But I think it's just going to be too difficult for me. It's too much work. I don't think I could handle that much work. I swear, he looked at me and he laughed. I go, this is 60 pages a week.
Right.
60 pages a week, and this is rain. And we did that on Smallville for 8 years, where it's like rain, and it's cold, and it's free, and it was all these things. So you got to almost like go, hey, this would be great if this was a movie, but I'm not sure I want to do this every week for maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years and be 60 years old and, you know, be in the hospital.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that entirely. And everything has to be taken in context of where you are in your life at that moment. Because again, you know, go back to my dad and I look at him and I go, yeah, okay. So he was doing that for us. He didn't ever really stop during that whole time to think, do I want to be doing this?
Yeah, kids, responsibility.
No, he did it for us.
He did it for you.
But if you're in a position where you can go, hey, look, I want to make sure that when I look back on life, I don't feel like I missed any opportunities that I wanted to do. And you know, you could miss an opportunity wasting, you know, doing 6 years of that. And also on the flip side of it, I guess fear comes into play a lot. I think that with an actor is
fear,
you know, if you take away, you know, oh, it's going to be difficult, I can't be bothered. How often is that actually you're just scared of it? In which case you definitely should do it.
Yeah.
No,
that's true. That's that.
So it's trying to find that balance where are you just not enthused by it, or are you scared of it?
Yeah, that's happened a few times where I'm like, no, I can't. And then my agent will go, listen, consider this. I think you could really do well at this.
Mm.
I think one of those things, that one of them was Smallville. I really thought, I thought maybe it'd be cheesy or corny. I just didn't think, you know. And then they're like, no, they're putting a shit ton of money behind this and they want to do this right and all these things. And so when I realized how good this could be for me, that was different. We got to get into the Harry Potter world, because we haven't even touched that, really, have we?
Not yet.
I mean, you're how old? 10 years old when you?
I got it at 10. I think we started when I was 11.
First of all, how do you get an audition like that? And did you read the books?
Yeah. So I think there was 4 books out at the time that I went for my first audition. And as I say, I've been.
You read them before, like prepare?
Just a fan. I was.
You just loved it. You were a
read
fan.
Them. Yeah, I loved it. And then I've been acting for like 5 years at that point, and they did an open audition. All across the nation, actually, they did tons of them, but one of them happened to be in Leeds. So the agency that I was with was sending a bunch of kids down, I mean, I was going regardless, but it just turned out that I happened to be a huge fan at the same time. So I went down and queued for, I think, like 5 hours, given like a little raffle ticket when I went in. And I think the number was like 463, and that was my place in the queue.
Oh,
and I just sat there for like 5 hours and then eventually got called in.
But first of all, how many people are there?
Well, I mean, in the hotel where we were, it was a big ballroom full of people, like maybe 1,000 people at this one. I mean, I know that nationwide over the original castings, they did like 40,000 kids.
Did you recognize anybody from school? Hey, Tim.
No, I didn't actually. No, I didn't at all. I saw a bunch of guys from like my agency that were, because we all went to like classes once a week. So there's a bunch of guys there.
Did Anthony audition?
And no, he was too old at that point.
Right.
And I remember, this has been something that's been with me for a long time that I've had to try and let go, is I remember they were all doing these warm-ups. And even at 10 years old, they're all doing these warm-ups all from the drama group. And they were warming their voices up and they were doing all these exercises. And I was like, that looks shit. I ain't doing that. That is that is pathetic. What are they all doing? How embarrassing do they look all doing those stupid warm-ups? And the worst thing is that because I got the part, now I, like, in my brain, I was like, yeah, I was right. I don't need fucking warm-ups. I don't need to go and do acting exercises.
Was it just
and...
for Neville there?
No, that was for anything.
Maybe you didn't know this, but maybe Emma was one of those people warming up.
This is it.
Maybe she was warming up.
This is why I've got this stupid thing in my head. Like, so, over the last sort of finishing Harry Potter, I've had to try and shake that attitude that, you know, there is technique and craft and all those kind of things are valuable and are important. But me being a little wise ass kid thought I was, you know, fuck that, I'm not doing that. I look like idiots, I'm not doing that. So yeah, all these kids are all out here, like 1,000 kids, whatever. Eventually I go in the room and there's only 3 of us and we just stood there. We read a paragraph. We were given a paragraph from the book to learn. It was one of Harry's lines and it was about 4 lines. Something very, very innocuous about a dragon's egg or something. I can't remember the quote now, but that was all we did. We just read that to camera. And then with our name held up while we did it. And that was it. In there for like 30 seconds.
And say your name. I'm Matthew Lewis.
Yep. And I also, like, I had a copy of my CV with me, which I left behind. They said, just leave your name and that's it. And I was like, I'll slip that underneath there. Put my CV in. Not saying that helped. Not saying it didn't either.
Oh, look at this sneaky bastard.
That's a little 5-year-long CV there.
We're going to get one tweet where somebody's like, don't ever do an English accent, Rosenbaum, ever. I know that's coming. They're going to say it. They're going to say it. Whenever an American does it, fucking around, they're like, oh, it's fucking awful. How often do you guys have those conversations at a bar with friends? God, these English people. These Americans, I mean, they with their English accents, they're terrible.
All the time.
Is there anyone that can really do one that you're like, fuck, that's pretty good?
I mean, there will be. Absolutely, there will be. I mean, I'm sure John Lithgow can do one probably pretty well. I've not seen The Crown, but I'm sure he's doing a good one.
I gotta watch that one.
I heard it's good.
By the way, you played Neville Longbottom.
Yeah.
I read this could be lying, but did you know?
Oh my god.
You have family members of the Longbottoms.
Right.
That's true.
In the book.
Right. Do you know their names? Do you know who your father's was?
yeah, I do. I just remembered it. Just popped in there, I think. Frank?
Yes!
Yeah.
Frank Longbottom.
Yeah.
How about that, Rob?
Frank.
I did some fucking research. What was your mother's name?
Alice.
Yes! And how about your wife later on?
Oh, Hannah Abbott.
Fucking, you are,
right?
You're a method actor, right? And your paternal grandfather. That doesn't mean anything. It just says Mr. Longbottom.
Oh, I'm gonna say, I have a clue.
You're human. Your gender is male. Yep. You have blonde hair.
I didn't dye my hair for that.
I'll join you when hell freezes over.
Yeah, I never even got to say that. I was looking forward to that one, and they cut it from the film. Didn't even put it in the screenplay.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you bummed?
Yeah, I thought it was quite a good line. That would have been quite fun to say.
It would have been a good one. Yeah, yeah, I guess. You knew the movies were going to be big, right? Did you think it would be more than one movie, and did you think you'd ever become as big of a role?
No.
Integral role as you did?
So even when we're doing all the like the meetings and stuff, and we went down to meet Chris Columbus and David Heyman and all the guys, even then I was like, do we know if it's going to be any good? I mean, how many books, how many phenomenons have we seen turn into a film and then it just fizzles out? The film translation doesn't work. You know, my parents were doing a very good job of, you know, just keeping me grounded and saying, you know, take everything with a pinch of salt. You never
By the
know.
Way, did you go to, were you going to school at this point?
Yeah.
You got it?
Yeah.
Did you, when you knew that you were Neville, were you going to school? Like, oh, I'm Neville Longbottom.
I think I actually got the role when I was in like summer holidays before going into high school. So sort of I'd gone to, I was going into a new high school and straight away having to go, just so you guys know, I ain't really going to be here very much. But it was, my brothers had been there previously, so they were aware of it. And it was, they'd had a lot of actors. They had a drama studio there and they'd had a lot of actors come through. So they were aware of the situation. So it wasn't abnormal to them and they were cool with it. We were told, you'll sign up for one and two. And then we'll see what happens. We might not even do the second one, but we'll sign you up for two and we'll see what happens.
And we may not even, you might be cut, you might be in the, you know, yeah,
exactly. And also, you know, it might be terrible, might not be good, might be recast, they might, you know, lose the character entirely. No idea. Because at that point, four books out, yeah, okay, so he's in it, he's a good supporting role, but no indication that he's going to go on.
Yeah, the first few episodes, you're not really, not a ton of Neville, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they probably didn't pay you shit, did they?
No, they did not. No.
Do you ever have regrets of that?
I mean, hey, I was like 11 years old. What can you do?
Whatever you make, it doesn't matter. Yeah, you're doing something you love. You're in a big blockbuster. Uh-huh. When was the moment where it's like, okay, we need to renegotiate? I'm becoming a bigger role.
Well, basically, after the first two, really. So when they after the first two, so we're gonna do three and four, and then I'd moved the agent at that point. I'd moved to a London agent, so they had a bit more nous about the whole thing and a bit more of a strong arm. So you know, we sort of renegotiated for that. And then when they kind of really did it was in
seven.
Was in five.
Oh, five.
Yeah, because they did it in two film blocks at a time. So after three and four, we did again for five and six. And by that point, you know, in five, it was starting to seem clear that Neville was going to become something more like he was part of the Dumbledore's army thing.
Right. He had some clout.
Yeah. And then luckily, like I say, every 2 years we got to renegotiate. So it was, I can't complain.
What was it like? I mean, walk me through just for a second. The first day on set, walking in as this character in this world, or at least what's the big room, the mess hall,
the great hall,
the great hall. What's it like being in that room for the first time and seeing like the immensity, the impact on you?
It's
that it
had. Kind of surreal. Having been a fan at that age, and having imagined it all in your head, and then to have someone say, "Oh, now you're gonna." Not just act it out and make believe like you do in your bedroom. You're gonna actually get to do this stuff. You're gonna be in the uniform with the wand. It's gonna be cool. And you walk onto the Great Hall, and it genuinely. I mean, I can't remember it hugely. I was 11 years old, but I remember it taking the breath away in that instant, just being like, "This is real." You know, it's not a dream. It's not someone telling you you'll do it and then it's half-assed. Or this is real. We're actually doing this, and this is gonna be on a cinema screen around the world. That's kind of the point at which you realize that they weren't messing around.
Yeah, and what about like starting to like work with like guys like Rickman and just being around and like these guys that everybody looked up to?
I was terrified, absolutely terrified. And that's probably one of my biggest regret about my life, even if you like, but especially of those whole films that, as I mentioned to you earlier, being that whole sort of age of 11 to 17, being very introverted and very, very shy, that I expression we say, I wouldn't say boo to a goose. I don't know if you use that over here, probably not. No.
Rob does.
Yeah.
All the time.
He boots his goose every day.
I wouldn't talk to anyone. I wouldn't say a word to anyone.
No one.
Yeah, right. And I, you know, if I was spoken to, of course, I'd speak back. But I think now at times when I'd be standing and doing a scene with Alan Rickman or with David Fewlis or Maggie Smith, and I'd just be, you know, in between takes, just silent, just staring at their shoes.
Like, this guy is weird.
Yeah, they must have thought I was an absolute freak of a kid.
Because you were terrified.
Yeah. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't know what to say to them. And as it turns out, as you get older and you get to like 19, 20 and you're talking to them on a level and they're just the most coolest, most down-to-earth normal people.
Like I
could have
had so much more fun.
Exactly that. Like I remember one time I was in hair and makeup and Gary Oldman.
Don't say, he's one of my favorites.
He took a shining to my trainers, right? He saw my sneakers and he was like, "Hey, my son would really love a pair of those. Where'd you get those from?
Give me them off your feet, son."
And I was at first I thought that's what he was asking because he's pretty intense. Like he's sort of staring at me and he's waiting for an answer. And I'm thinking, is he expecting me to offer them to him? But I think he just wanted to know genuinely where they were from. And I was sort of, "It's just from a shoe store in Leeds." I just couldn't get any words out. And I look back now and he thought I was just, he was just staring at me like, "What the fuck is wrong with you, child? Speak." He didn't say that, obviously, but I could see it behind his eyes. That's what he was thinking.
Could you imagine if he called you out in like one of the movie, The Professional? "Everyone!" He's like, "Neville!"
But I look back and just think we could have had like a genuine conversation and he wouldn't have think I was an absolute freak. And now if I was to meet Gary Oldman on a red carpet, people would probably think, oh, well, they're old pals, they'll know each other.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have a fucking clue who
so
I was.
You could have been good friends with Oldman.
Yeah.
If you would have given me your fucking shoes.
Mm. You could have taken the damn shoes. See, now I look back at 28, I'd be like, I'd have taken those shoes off so quick. And I'd have just put them in his hands.
You could have
taken
probably
Gary.
Been married
take
to Emma Gary. Watson
it's
right
just
now.
It's ridiculous.
You, there's so many things that could happen.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. But you know what?
That's my advice to all children. Is
but that turned around, though, after what year where you're like, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah, I guess I got to like 17, 18.
Oh, my God. It really took a while, didn't it?
Yeah. I was too busy watching Star Trek at home until then. And then I got to like 17, 18, and I don't know. It's almost like switched overnight, and I just... I don't know whether it's an acting thing where you go, you know what, I'm sick of being this kid who can't say anything. I'm still going to be him, but what I'll do is I'll create a persona during the day where I'm actually quite cool. And I'll act.
You're pretending
I'll
while you're... Right.
And then eventually you become that. And it's kind of like a bit of advice I'd say to any young kids that are struggling. I'd say just create someone who you think's cool and pretend to be them for a bit. And eventually you'll just become that person.
Oh, I hope they choose wisely.
Yeah, right.
Because that could be a real mistake. I mean, did you hang out with Rickman a lot?
Alan, probably more, definitely more than Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
We had a few scenes together because I don't think Gary and I had any, well, very brief scenes together where we were like ships in the night. You know, we'd actually interact. But Alan and I had a few scenes together. Yeah, so we hung out a little bit.
And did you take his passing pretty hard? I think everybody did.
Yeah, it was just such a... the most bizarre thing for me was that I was at Leaves and Studios when the news came through. I'd gone down to go and see... they were filming Fantastic Beasts at the time. And I'd just gone in to go and meet with David Yates and David Heyman, who were, you know, still together as a team on that film. I just went down to just catch up. I hadn't seen them for a few years. I said, I'm in town. I'll come over and I'll just come in. They said, oh, we'll take you on the set. And so we're doing all that, you know, Eddie Redmayne's there and everyone's there. And it's like, oh, it's weird to be back in this studio when they're filming a sort of Harry Potter thing, but it's not ours and it's very surreal. And then suddenly the news headline comes through on my phone and everyone sort of gets it simultaneously. It was just, and everyone was just shell-shocked. And then to be there in those corridors, which look different, have been all renovated, but, you know, they're still the same walls, you know, there's still the same halls that we walked down, and you could just picture him right there in situ. And that was a very surreal time, actually. That whole day just is a bit of a blur to me now. I can remember everything before the news came through and nothing from after.
Do you remember crying at all?
No. Yeah, I'm not really a crier.
Are you a crier?
I'm not really a crier, yeah, Michael.
I cry every once in a while, but I don't like to cry in front of people.
Right.
Unless I just really have to.
I've cried at films.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, I can't stop crying at films. Like weeping.
Is that because maybe your family was very strong? Your dad, you never saw him cry?
maybe. I don't know. My dad cries now.
He does.
He says that as well. He says he when he was younger, he never used to, and then as he got older, I don't know whether it's having kids that does it to you or what, but he does now.
Or maybe, you know.
When he's watching TV.
Prostate.
Oh, maybe it's that. Maybe it's that. I can hear him be quite painful.
Rob, what do you think?
I heard that's connected to your tear ducts.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this. I have this idea that, you know, I guess I had this idea. I think maybe people do. That, you know, when you're an Alan Rickman kind of actor or Gary Oldman, they don't mess up. They're just always genius. They're always perfect. They've been given the gift.
Right.
You got to witness it firsthand. Did you see them messing up? Did you see them like normal actors, like finding it, trying to figure it out, not there, taking take after take after take?
No.
Damn it!
Honestly, like, it's one of those things when they come in and they you know, the complete package is right there on the day.
They're ready to go.
Yeah. And I'm always thinking, have you been getting like remedial time with the director? Have you been like all off in your dressing room, doing it for... No, he just comes straight on and he just knows what he's doing. So everyone fluffs a line now and then, but in terms of character, in terms of energy,
was it pretty intense? Are they intense guys? Like,
can be, yeah, can be.
Like, it's not, you want to go after a take and go, hey, Alan, that was really good, man.
But then capable of, like, Michael Gambon's one who is always amazing at breaking any kind of ice or anything like that.
Always laughing, jokester.
Absolutely full of filthy jokes.
To just jump into it. Filthy jokes. He's telling children a bunch of filthy jokes.
Yeah, Michael doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
What's a joke that you remember him telling?
I remember seeing Alan like belly laugh.
Really?
Yeah, like really like reverberating around the Great Hall, and everyone's like, "What the fuck is that noise?" It's like, it's Alan laughing. And it was I remember stuff like that.
Let's talk a little bit about the transformation, because you went from playing, well, first of all, I'll let you describe, how would you describe Neville?
Not too dissimilar to how I've described myself of that age, really.
Really?
Yeah.
And how would you describe yourself?
Yeah,
that age?
So it was
shy.
Yeah, very shy. Not one to speak up in class and in a group of, even a group of friends that he feels relatively comfortable in. I don't think he'd be the one to speak up. He was bullied, which I wasn't. So he had a lot of that kind of stuff. And he had a lot of reasons for all this kind of stuff, with his parents being, he lost his parents to insanity when he was very young. They're in a hospital. And he sort of lives with his overbearing grandmother, who nothing's ever, he'll never be as good as his father was in his grandmother's eyes. And so that's very difficult for him. So he's kind of got various reasons to be a little bit shy and a little bit.
But then look at yourself now.
Right.
How you have went from this role to, I mean, obviously you grew up. That's a big part of it. You know, you grew up. But, you know, for me, I remember I had this really kind of long hair and I had these two fucked up teeth. They were all jacked up. And my manager at the time, Dave Becky, goes, "Fix your teeth. Cut your fucking hair and stop wearing that stupid jacket." I continued to wear the jacket. I wasn't going to sell out completely. Right. No, but I did. And my career changed.
Yeah.
My career changed. I started getting considered for lead roles, mm-hmm. and being big parts and doing things. And it worked. I needed someone to be honest with me. Someone to say things like, you know, we all have those friends. You need one friend that says, "Rosenbaum, you're getting a gut."
Right.
"Rosenbaum, you know, get some sleep."
Yeah.
Which they say every day. You changed. Like, you had a big, like, you changed. All of a sudden, people ask me on the streets. They're like, "Oh my God, he's so hot." Like, you're like this hot guy now.
I mean, it's
you hate that. You hate that.
Hey, I'm never going to hate people complimenting me at all. Like, I mean, that's, you know,
yeah.
That's no bad thing. The only thing for me that I find mostly uncomfortable about it is that people say, particularly in America, you know, the idea is, you know, wear it as a badge of honor. It's like, you know, you go into a room, whether you believe it or not, you want to go in there and you want to hold your head high and you want to say, "Yeah, I'm fucking hot. Yeah, I'm the one. Everyone look at me. And I'm terribly bad at that. I don't know if it's an English thing or whatever. I'm terribly bad at that. And I also don't feel that, you know, like Brad Pitt, you know, Tom Cruise, these are objectively good looking guys. I am possibly, maybe to some people, subjectively a little bit nice to look at, possibly, maybe. Yeah. But I'm not objectively, I'm not a model. I'm not I'm acutely aware of that. So when people sort of say he's really hot, I sort of think they're kind of going mad a little bit.
Well, I'm thinking more of just like in terms of your transformation. You went from this character that was kind of just shy and weird and just, you know,
yeah,
cute in a goofy kind of way. Uh-huh. And then you transformed into, and the short answer is, yeah, I grew the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I grew up, I fucking worked out. I got some muscles. I fixed my hair.
I wore a fucking agonizing brace for 6 months, which was...
You did what?
I wore you call them braces, right?
Braces.
Yeah, I wore, 6 months I wore this spring-loaded brace.
To straighten your teeth?
Yeah.
Were they all crooked?
God, it was like...
Painful.
So painful. Because originally the guy wanted me to do it for 2 years. I said, "Man, I'm going to be on a red carpet in 6 months. I'm wearing braces for 2 years. And he was like, "Well, the only other alternative is this thing, this new thing, where you put it in daily, but it's going to hurt." And I was like...
And then they have to adjust them. They have to keep adjusting them, yeah.
Yeah, and I put it in every day. I had to put it in and sleep in it, and it was for 6 straight months just agony as my forced my teeth together. But I mean, it worked out. I get to keep my teeth as well. I didn't want to have to.
They're all your real teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, these are veneers. These top 6 months.
Yeah.
Because I had them like hit knocked in hockey. I had like,
okay,
I had them bonded and they kept falling off.
Uh-huh.
So she said the only way to stop this and coming to the dentist 10 times a year, yeah, is to just get them veneered. So I did. And people always like, "Your teeth are so nice." I'm like, "Not mine."
Yeah, I got to keep mine. So
I mean, they're partly mine. There's like a little piece.
But I don't play ice hockey. I never beat out.
You played rugby though, right? A little bit?
No, I played like touch and pass. Yeah. Non-contact.
Oh, yeah? You know the rules.
You get the odd split lip now and then, but
From your old buddy Nick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, jeez, he goes steaming in.
You like?
I tell you one thing. Before we move on from that, I tell you one thing. Some people sort of say about like, oh, you know, puberty hit you really well. Oh, you know, puberty did such a good job with you. I was like, I was 21. How old do you think I went through puberty? Like, fucking hell. No, I got braces and I went to a gym. I didn't go through fucking puberty at 21. Are you kidding me right now?
Unbelievable. The audacity, really.
Yeah, right?
you love doing plays. Do you? Because you do a lot of plays. You were in the West End. You did. Didn't you do a play last year?
I've done two in the West End now. And then one which is like a tour.
Isn't that just grueling? Those hours to me are like 8 shows a week. You're on for 3 hours. Aren't you just exhausted?
Yeah, I mean, the last one I did was no interval. We just went right through.
What? For how long? Four months?
It was like, how long was it? Like an hour and a half, I think. Oh, for how long was it, the run? It was 3 months, 12 weeks.
Were you ready for it to be done?
Yeah. But only, surprisingly, usually I get it a lot earlier. Usually just in the last week, I was like, I think I'm ready now. I think I'm ready to finish.
So you're not really, I mean, you love theater, you love doing it, but you're like not, like, you don't want to do as much theater as you did. I'm sensing that.
Yeah, I think the theater for me was an opportunity because I kind of did the whole acting career backwards, if you like.
Start theater and then you
So I did a few TV, but like I was straight to a blockbuster movie, huge global franchise at 11 years old until I was 21 and suddenly get spat out into the real world. And it's like, I don't have any foundation on this industry, on my career, my technique, anything at all.
Was it in a sense proving yourself? Is that what you felt?
Yeah, a little bit, but it was as much proving myself as it to learn, really. I wanted to go and see, you know, Alan Rickman told me on his last day I went to his trailer just to say thank you, because, you know, to him is just another movie, but for me, and I imagine pretty much everyone on it, it's fucking Alan Rickman for 10 years. So I had to go and say, might not mean that much to you, but as a young actor, this has been the coolest thing ever to work opposite you. And he said, you know, come in, have a cup of tea. And we just sat in his trailer for a bit. And
were you nervous then, like a little Neville?
Yeah, of course.
Even then,
even at 21 years old. Yeah, but he was so cool. And we just sat in there and he asked me like what I was planning on next and what I should
do. Then he asked you for your shoes.
And and I didn't give them to him either.
No.
So I really dropped the ball there. Still got them shoes. He basically just said, you know, theater is a great place to start. It's where I learned, where, you know, all this kind of stuff. And he said, it's you know, it's really worth doing. And so the first thing after Harry Potter I did was a play. It was a terrible play, and I was terrible in it. Everyone else was brilliant, and I was terrible in it because I didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing. I didn't know how to project my voice. I didn't know how to build a character. I didn't know how to do anything.
Did you start to doubt yourself as an actor?
I mean, I got halfway through this tour, and not even halfway through, the reviews were just terrible.
About you?
Yeah, like brutal. Like, my voice was excruciating. I was out of my depth. All this kind of just really horrible thing.
But read them?
Yeah, and I'm glad I did in this context. I wouldn't read them now. But I'm glad I did in this context, because there was me at 21 years old coming out of, at the time, the biggest film series of all time, being like, yeah, I can do this job. How hard can it be? And I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
Wow.
And I needed that to basically bring me down to earth and go, no, this is not a piece of, you know, this isn't something you can come in and put your feet up and for the whole rehearsal process and they expect to step out on stage and ace it. That ain't going to happen. This is something that people spend their entire lives trying to perfect, trying to hone this craft, and you've got to fucking do it.
So most people would have thought, I probably would have been like, okay, I suck at theater, but I was really good on film. So I'm going to stick it to film. But you didn't. You went back to theater.
Don't get me wrong. Like, a big part of me was there. Like, I remember, again, Nick, right? I had him. I got him on the phone. I was in Cardiff, doing a play in Cardiff, and I called up and went, I'm done. I was just like 4 months into it, 2 months left. It's like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. The reviews are shit. It's not getting better. Can't fucking do it.
From what I have known of Nick, I can imagine him just saying, okay.
No, I mean,
what did he do?
He said, actually, to his credit, he said, so what are you going to do with the rest of your life? And I was like, I don't know, because you've done this since you were 5. What are you going to do if not this? I was like, I don't know. He's like, well, then make it work. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, just make it work. What can you do now to make this work?
Wow. Wow, somebody else matured.
And yeah. No, because I think he's that was the pinnacle of his maturity. I think he's regressed since then.
Yeah, oh, I can imagine.
He said that, and he was right. And basically, I went back. I called the director rather than bury my head in the sand. I said, "What am I doing wrong? What can I do to fix this?" And he worked tirelessly with me, and I looked at the other actors, and I went, you know, and I went back to the starting board and drawing board, and in the last 2 months, the reviews flipped on their head. And
Wait a minute. So you went from disaster, I want to walk out,
yeah,
to Nick, the prophet,
yeah,
fucking telling you, what are you going to do? And then the next thing you know, you get this confidence.
Because I was fucking lazy, is what it was.
This newfound love, you weren't putting enough work into
it. Yeah, I was lazy. I thought I could do it, and I couldn't.
And how did you do that? How did you change?
So I went. I basically sat with the other actor. You know, like I said, the director really worked with me a lot. And he did all that stuff that I said, I'm not warming up. I'm not doing those stupid workshop, those exercises. I'm not doing all that. You're
he's still dwelling on that?
Yeah.
He's still dwelling at the audition process of those kids who never did anything with their lives.
Those idiots. But no, they were the right ones all along. And the director put me through all these things. And you know, you let those inhibitions go. You stop going, oh, I look silly. You know, oh, I'm doing all these, you know, when you're doing your vocal warm-ups and you're shouting out these tongue twisters.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers bolting briskly down the boulevard.
Oh, my God, I look like an idiot. You go, forget that. You don't look like an idiot because you're a professional actor and this is what you've got to do. And so you start doing this stuff. And I was looking at the other actors, seeing what they were asking their advice. And they started to speak from your diaphragm, all this kind of stuff, and doing all these jobs that isn't their job at all. But they all spent this time with me, you know, in the wings of the theater, helping me, and then
all of a sudden the news: wow, Matthew David Lewis has really made a turnaround, folks.
Does not
a voice that was hard to listen to has now turned into a soft pendulum of love,
bearable.
So all of a sudden the reviews were getting better.
Yeah, the reviews were good. The last couple of weeks of the show,
that's amazing.
Were really great reviews. For me personally, the play was still terrible. Everyone else was great. But the reviews for me personally were strong. And so a year later, when I suddenly got bumped up, I got offered a West End gig. So I'm not touring anymore. I'm going to be in the heart of Britain's theatre. And I kind of jumped at that one a little bit. And again, it was, you know, you go back to square one. You go, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't remember how to do this. It was a year ago. I'm going to be terrible again. Oof. But you throw yourself into the rehearsal process and you do. And admittedly, I do prefer film and TV. I still wake up in cold sweats, the actor's nightmare, where I'm about to go on for this play in the West End and I don't know my lines or I've not even seen the bloody script.
I still have those dreams. I'm not even doing any theater anymore.
Crippling nightmares that I have. So, you know, if I'm going to do a play, it has to be something that I'm really passionate about. I love this story or whatever. But I've learned so much doing that. It just it turned my whole world upside down because it was going, you know, you can't hide behind good directors and good DOPs out there. You've got to do it and you've got to put the work in.
Wow. You can't hide behind good DPs and good directors.
Yeah.
Isn't that the freaking truth?
Yeah.
Because if they light you beautifully in one movie and you look great in the... everything is just directed perfectly and they can get something out of you, it doesn't mean you're a good actor.
No, I don't think so. And this is one thing that I didn't learn either. Something as simple as being on your cues, for example. Simple, like knowing when the cue's coming and be really listening and be ready with your response. I wasn't doing shit like that. But in the film world, if there's a huge pause between the last person's line, they just cut it out.
Yeah.
And it makes me look brilliant. But it wasn't there. It wasn't there in reality. And when it was on stage, it was painfully obvious that it wasn't there in reality. And so it's little stuff like that that you know, that I probably missed out on by not going to drama school or whatever, that I had to just learn. And that's what theatre did for me. And still does. I mean, like the last play I did was, same thing, having huge meltdowns on the phone to the director at 1 a.m. going, Adam, I can't do this. I can't do it. We're going on stage in a week.
Were you really like grief stricken? Like just, or?
Yeah, I mean, all four of us actually. It was a 4-man show and you
was
know.
Was it not good?
No, it was a brilliant show. It was a superb show. And I was playing a male escort.
What was the show called?
It was called Unfaithful.
Unfaithful. Not based on the movie Unfaithful.
No. It was a new play.
Different kind of unfaithfulness.
What's the film about?
It's about cheating.
Yeah, same kind of unfaithfulness. Well,
that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, that's the same thing.
Same kind.
No, it was about this, you know, this guy. I don't need to go on. It's Richard Gere. You should watch it. It's a great movie.
Okay.
And he like catches his wife having an affair with this guy, but she calls it off. But he goes and confronts the guy and then accidentally kills him and then buries his body and all this shit happens.
Oh, wow. No, it's not. This all takes place in a sort of, well, a lot of it in a hotel and then someone in someone's living room, but it's basically, I'm a male escort.
Ooh.
And I have a long-term girlfriend, and so it's how our relationship is strained by what I'm doing, and she goes out one night to try and get into my head to try and understand it so she feels more comfortable, and so she flirts with this guy for ages. She doesn't sleep with him, but she goes as far as almost about to sleep just so she can get into that mindset to think, is it something where he can detach himself, or does he have feeling there? And then this guy's wife finds out that he almost slept with this girl, and in retaliation, she hires a male escort, which happens to be me. Slightly contrived, I'll admit, but it creates a whole clusterfuck of scenes.
I like it.
And we're all on, you know, like I say, we're all on stage for the entire duration, no interval. And
the whole time, an hour and a half?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's different scenes that we're not in, but even then we're just sat off to the side and still performing in the way that it was set up, is that we were still almost, even though we weren't in the scene, we were still part of the scenery.
You ever zone out?
Yeah.
Oh my God, where are we? What is she saying? What's my next line?
All the time.
Yeah, I've done that. So you've done tons of theater. You like film and TV a little more. Where do you see yourself? Like, because you're still a young guy. You're 28. What do you want to do? You want to get on a really good series? Because TV's where it's at now. Cable are making the most terrific series. I would just watch the series Dark on Netflix. It's unbelievable. I've only seen the first five. I mean, I would love to be on a show like that. I'd love to do a cable series, something like that, where you can do 10 episodes, kick some ass, and you know.
I mean, I think, you know, having done Harry Potter for 10 years, I am reluctant to dive into something that is going to take up my entire life for the next, you know, like you were saying earlier, that's going to take, you know, 6-7 years doing the same thing for 10 months of a year. I'm just not sure that that's really what I want to do.
But that's why cable, you only do like four or five months.
You're looking at cable and it's like mini series, 10, 12 episodes. Yeah. And I think that is, I mean, even as a watcher, like a viewer, I love that. Yeah. I love that setup.
Yeah. Take a break with the actors. You go away for a while. Yeah,
I mean, I'm, you know, from the British setup anyway, we're used to like 6-episode series. That's what I've always done when I'm doing British TV shows. Is I think the most I did in a series was 8 episodes once.
Right.
So I'm used to that setup as an actor, but I as much as a viewer as well. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, hey, don't get me wrong, films are still. Still the dream. They're still the kind of like far out little that little boy wanting to be in the big blockbuster or whatever. But I think in terms of quality, I don't think there's a difference anymore at all.
Are you insatiable? Do you feel like if somebody said, "Hey, Harry Potter, you did 8, and that's it. You'll work and you'll make some money here and there, but you're not gonna." Is that enough for you?
No, because
it's not.
No,
will you be disappointed?
I mean, again, it's always looking at everything in context and saying, I mean, Harry Potter will be the biggest thing I've ever done. I mean,
that's the key, right?
It's something to look at and go, hey, and before Star Wars did its new ones, it was the biggest film series of all time. That was the pinnacle that the 0.001% of actors will ever attain in terms of the size of the movie. And I'm fine with that, you know, if that doesn't go up there again, anywhere near that. What I mean by that is that I will always have that, and I will. And if I never get there again,
right. And what I'm saying is that is enough.
Then thrilling.
That's the point
I'm thrilled with that.
Yeah, because that's true. It's you know,
it's greedy. It should be like, I only did these fucking 8 blockbuster movies.
And it's actually a stupid question. It's a stupid question. I'm gonna. You know why? It's a stupid question, Rob. You know why? Because it's you know. You did this movie for 8 years. You can't say, oh, if that's all you had done, because you don't know. You're 28 years old. You don't know what's going to happen. You could do whatever, but would you be happy if that was like, I guess my question.
I think I can absolutely, I won't beat myself up because, I mean, how many people even get to experience that? And I got to do it for eight years, 10 years, 8 films. But does it mean that I'm going to stop striving to
be in the next Harry Potter?
Right.
Know,
I'll keep,
well, of course, Well, I think it's a bad question, but what I meant by it, well, is that, you know, like I asked Tom Welling.
Is there such a thing as a bad question?
No, yes, there is today. No, but, you know, I thought, you know, if Smallville's all I ever did and that was it. Would Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky. I got to do one of the biggest shows on TV, and I had a great time, and I thought I did a decent job, and I made a little money, and I'm proud of that. And if, you know, I'm 70 years old, and people are like, "Oh, that's it. That's all you ever did." Fuck it.
Do you?
I don't care. I'm happy with that.
Do you see Smallville as? And you might be able to educate me on this. Do you see Smallville as the start of this superhero series? I mean, obviously,
you know,
we had Batman.
I talked about that.
In the 60s and
I think
stuff,
that
but
it's
I mean,
a big. Yeah, it's the first.
The
time
modern.
Yes, because I thought they took it really seriously. It was dramatic. It was the story before the story. It showed that shows like this can really work on TV. They don't have to be hokey, and they don't have to be whatever, and they can have this big following.
And it can pack a punch, and it's not.
And they can treat and the visually would be stimulating, and the budget and all the things that go into making a great show. And I think that's with any show. But yes, I think it was one of the first ones that
because
really.
Because if you look at the shows that are out there now, the superhero shows, I mean, could any of them be on TV right now had Smallville not paved the way?
I don't know. I mean, that's I could easily say, yeah, they would never be. I don't.
Well, you don't know, do you?
I don't know, but I know that, you know, I'm very grateful. And I think that Smallville was, you know, certainly one of those shows that spawned like a lot of other. Look at, I mean, there's The Flash and there's The Arrow and there's all these great shows.
Yeah.
And so would, you know, if it wasn't Smallville, it would have been something else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud to say we made a great show and lasted, you know, 8-10 years. And, you know, a lot of people, like, especially think about it, CW and WB. WB came to the CW, and a lot of these shows are now on the CW.
Yeah.
So they go, Smallville worked. What else can work? The Flash, Arrow, and then all of a sudden Gotham, like, and all these other different shows on different networks. So, yeah, I will take full credit for it. No. The creators and Warner Brothers for creating a great show.
I think you got to do one thing I quite enjoy. It's so aside from the art and the craft and all the things we're talking about, but what other job could you have done whether they're going, you know, you get to see what it's like to live as a bald man for this amount of time. And that's, you're getting paid for that stuff.
Yeah.
And you get to experience it. Like, I had to wear a mustache, okay, for Ripper Street.
I saw
Ripper
that.
Street,
you
a mustache.
Great with a mustache. Very porn style, but very kind of, I liked it.
I didn't have it as long as you. I 8 months I had this mustache. And everyone's kind of like, I would never grow a mustache out of my own personal choice. But you know what? I got to do that for 8 months. I have his mustache. And
but
like,
imagine shaving
cool,
your
man.
Head 7 years. It was a little
Yeah, 7 years a little
After
long.
After a while,
a little
it
long.
Got, like, it was all right, but I was definitely like, I want my hair back.
Yeah, it's a little
But,
long.
You know, the good thing is like Greg Beeman, who's the executive producer and directed a lot, he said one day, he's like, dude, you're the only person that when you grow your hair back, you'll look completely different. And so it was awesome. I go, wow. And that kind of got me through the next five years.
Yeah, that's huge.
You know.
That helps, yeah.
But back to you. Back to you. All right, this is it. Because we get fucking carried away.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting back for my dinner.
You have a big dinner with...
Yeah,
anniversary
dinner.
Question from Matthew from Lisa. These are the last questions. You
what
can
are
be
these?
Quick. We're going to run these quick.
What are these?
If people wanted to know. Online.
Oh, okay.
Does Matt remember nearly causing a riot in downtown Toronto a few years ago? My boss looked out the window and asked, why is that crowd screaming Neville, hot Neville?
2011, it would have been the last time we did a press tour, and I was sent alone to Toronto, and
mob scene.
They went mad for it. It was mad. Yeah, it was good. It was good. I felt like a beetle for like a day.
If you could pick a different character to play in Harry Potter, who would it be? Or is there a character you personally relate to more?
Not really. Probably Neville was the one I probably related to the most.
I'm
actually looking at your little sheet here, so I can think
cheat
of some.
Sheet of characters.
No, I'd say I do. It's not on there. But I really liked Lupin, Professor Lupin, David Thewlis's character. Yeah.
So if you were older, you would have played that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rob, you had a couple.
Yeah. What did you think of the Fantastic Beast movies?
Haven't seen them. But I did meet, I went, like I say, I went
on
set,
set,
I met Eddie.
They were great. And he's a great actor.
Yeah, superb. Very
People
nice
like
guy.
That movie. My friend Troy Rudolph, I've talked about, he loves that movie.
He was a very nice chap.
Yep.
Rachel wants to know, do you think being in Harry Potter stalled your career in any ways?
I mean, that's a silly question.
That's a stupid question. Rachel, I love you, but fuck.
I understand what...
Stalled your career. It gave him a career.
Yeah, I understand what she's
saying. I'm
going
to answer that for you.
I mean, I wouldn't be sitting out here in the Hollywood Hills chatting to Michael Rosenbaum if I hadn't been in that movie. I mean, it put me on the map, and I was able to do 8 super blockbuster movies, and then I've worked for Warner Brothers a couple of times since then, and they wouldn't have even known who the hell I was if I'd not done that.
Are you living in Los Angeles now?
Yeah, temporarily.
Temporarily. Yeah. For how long? Will your home always be in Leeds?
No, I moved away from Leeds.
Well, you're in London.
Yeah, in London, yeah. We'll see. I mean, we're here for a few months. We'll see how it goes. Angela's American, so we'll see. She likes the sunshine, which we don't get a whole lot of in London.
Does she ever say, I don't know what you just said?
Yeah, all the time.
Slow down.
Constantly.
I remember in the car up to Leeds, he was driving right after we went to the Harry Potter set in, what where is it again?
Watford.
Watford. Watford. See, I couldn't even remember. How do you spell what you're saying?
W-A-T-F-O-R-D.
Right. He said, we're listening to a song. And I go, who is that? He goes, Arctic Monkeys. I'm like, what? What the fuck? What would you say?
Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, I go, who? This is before anybody knew who the Arctic Monkeys were.
Yeah, right.
And you kept saying it over and over. And I was like, slow down. I don't. And I could see him getting pissed. I'm like, and I kept asking him.
Constantly. She constantly.
That's on in my car right now.
You love that.
They're going to be touring this year.
That.
We got to go see him, man.
I'd love to.
They're touring this year.
How about Depeche Mode in Anaheim? Would you go to that? Yeah. Do you like them?
Yeah.
I'll get his tickets. What is Depeche
Mode? That is old school, man.
Not you, Rob. You don't like Depeche Mode. This has been a real treat. I mean, I could talk to you for hours because it's just easy. It feels like.
Yeah, right.
It is. Did you have fun today?
Yeah, man. I can't believe that we're out of time.
Yeah, I mean, we're way out of time. This is going to have to be cut down.
Yeah, no one's going to listen to this shit.
No, this is great. Matthew, David Lewis, this has been, this is very exciting. I know you're a busy guy, and I'm excited to see what you're going to do in the future. I know you have a ton of fans, and thank you for allowing me to be inside of you.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure to have you inside of me, as usual.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.